Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
They rush four. They run a stunt. Barnes hits him. Down he goes. Back at the 32-yard line. Deion Barnes with the sack for the Nittany Lions.
And here's the handoff. McCreary left side has a hole, leans ahead, and he is into the end zone. Touchdown, Shikalemi.
Empty backfield. They show blitz. Barrett goes back. Here comes Barnes. He delivers. Intercepted. 35-30. Near side, 25-20. 15-10-5. Settle. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lion defense turns the game around.
Pistol formation. Offset McCreary to the right. Low snap. Controlled by Schlegel. He'll fire it to Dunn.
Great block to the 30. Now to the outside of the 25-20. 15-10-5. Touchdown. And Shikalemi, Dunn on the wide receiver screen, got a beauty of a block from Joe Snyder downfield and broke him for the touchdown. Elliott to the right now at Barrett, two left, two right. Barrett takes it, wants to throw on first down. A lot of time over the middle, intercepted by Hull at the 40. Hull near side, 45, 50. Hull swings it to his left at the 45 and spun down there, and the defense does it again.
Kerber in motion to the near side, making it one receiver to the near side. Play action pass, Schlegel back to pass, has a lifetime. Looking long downfield, Kerber caught for a touchdown! Kerber in double coverage makes the grab, and the Braves have extended the lead 20-0 with 2:08 to go on a 33-yard touchdown pass from Petey to Kerber.
Hackenberg back, wants to throw for it. Near corner, looking for Saeed Blackdahl, reaches up in the end zone. He's got it! Touchdown, Penn State! It's a one-score game! With 11:08 to go, and this joint goes wild.
Clock winding with 4:12 to go. Feldman, sidecar right. Gannett rolling out. Pressure's coming. Gets a block. Sets up. Fires it downfield in the end zone. Touchdown! Danville in the back of the end zone.
Waits. Good snap. Put down. For overtime. The kick is up. The kick is good. Penn State comes all the way back and ties Ohio State 17-17 with 9 seconds to go. And in the clutch, the Nittany Lions do it again.
Here's the handoff. Ford over the right side has some running room to the two, to the one. Touchdown! Quanier Ford with his first touchdown of the season. And with 7:23 remaining, it is Shikalemi 34 and Danville 7.
Takes the snap. Felton keeps it himself up the middle. Felton to the goal line. Touchdown, Penn State. The Nittany Lions take the lead in overtime.
And welcome to the Steve Jones Show, where we have our Monday montage. Highlights from the weekend that was here on WKOK. Shikalemi being Danville, unfortunately, right, Penn State.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello. I didn't realize the show had changed hands. All right. The Steelers did a good job yesterday. They got the Ravens this week. We got Penn State and Maryland coming up this week. And more of Kevin Herr's highlights coming up.
Oh, I like that. That's a show I'll listen to.
Great.
Hey, Steve, I have Joe from Mifflinburg on the line already to chat with you today.
Joe, how are you today? Great to hear from you.
I'm actually calling to bust your chops. Last Tuesday, after the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Monday night team, you said, and I don't know if you were kidding around or not, but you said that we were going to lose to the Colts based on the pattern of a win-loss, 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 win. We didn't lose. They won.
I didn't know you played.
That's why I said they. At the end, I realized I was saying we, but when I laughed, I said they.
That's all right. I do the same thing. I'm invested.
I do the same thing when it comes to the Phillies, the Steelers, the Lions. Always call it we, but it's they. They're the ones that get beat up every week in, week out. And I sit home getting heavier and watching the game.
You have got a big game this week, though, my man. They got the Ravens on Sunday night. Now the rules of engagement have changed. They have a chance to seize true control in the division.
Well, that's why I've already trimmed my nails back as far as I can. Now I don't have to fight.
So, you know, I thought they played a great game offensively yesterday.
They did.
Defensively.
They finally got their collective heads out of their collective backside.
Yeah.
Let's see if they can keep up the momentum come against the Ravens.
Yeah, I thought the play calling's pretty good.
Or was it
the execution?
Blind squirrel finds an acorn once in a while.
Once again, another bad Kevin week where it's just another theory just flushed.
Actually, I don't think so, Joe. Here's what I saw yesterday. I saw a Steeler team running the football for a change and running play action out of it.
I'm turning my mic off. We're going to go for the ridiculous of the absurd here.
Unfortunately, I have to listen to it on radio, so I got to hear it, not see it.
Oh, Kevin.
Poor Kevin.
Thanks, Joe. I'm glad you feel
Kevin,
my pain.
Kevin.
The fun
ball's ball not. Ball's not stuffed. It's inflated. All right. Kevin.
Thanks a lot, Joe. Have a good one, bud.
You sure,
Kev? What was it yesterday? Was it execution? Was it play calling? Was it? But what was it?
Well, there was a lot of good execution. For a change, I did not feel like, you know, John McKay, where they said, "What do you think about the execution of your team?" I'm for it. You know, in this particular case, their execution was not bad. I just think the play calling actually was what it should have been for a change, and that's they were running a lot of play action on those pass plays that were effective.
They did nothing different play calling yesterday.
I
maybe a couple. Okay, it's five guys up front that blocked in such a way that kept Ben Roethlisberger completely clean.
Well, now that's very true.
Right. Okay, and you would be stunned that when you are blocking and you're protecting, you can call virtually any play in the book that you want. You've got a really good shot at making the play happen. I thought the MVPs of the game were the five offensive linemen. Thought they were brilliant by what they did. I thought they blocked brilliantly on the run game. I think they protected him so well that he carved up a defense that pitched a shutout the week before, which was outstanding. Now, defensively, I thought they did a, actually, I thought defensively in an odd sort of way, I thought Dick LeBeau reverted to the Dick LeBeau that we see when the Steelers play with a lead. Traditionally, Dick LeBeau, when they have played with the lead, they've blitzed and gone after people. They don't sit back, and they did a good job against a guy that's an absolutely outstanding quarterback in Andrew Luck, and they got him off balance a little bit by what they did. Now, you know, not having Wayne didn't help, but still, he played a lot without Reggie Wayne last year, too.
I mean, all in all, that's about the best game you could hope for from that football team against a quality Colts team.
Hey, let's not forget Big Ben set two records yesterday, over 500 yards passing and six touchdown passes. That's a Steelers record, but he's the first quarterback in the history of the NFL to have two 500-yard passing games. Never been done till yesterday. Not bad.
No doubt about that.
Hey, Steve, I want to compliment you on Saturday night about 6:30-ish, you made a prediction. I was standing right there and heard it with my own ears. And you said the key to the game for Penn State is to keep it close going to the fourth quarter, that if that was occurred, the whiteout, the fans, might have a role in defeating or at least going after a very good Ohio State game, that it really came down to that. And golly gosh and gee whiz, you were right.
Well, that's from being around it a long time.
That's part of it, but I think you analyzed it perfectly. And as the game was progressing, first the Zettel touchdown and then the Hall interception, I'm thinking, Did Steve see the script or something? What? This is laying out exactly like you hoped it would for Penn State.
Well, it's just you're around things for a long time, and you also see some things that matchup-wise are in your favor, which then in turn helps you, with your play calling.
I think that was for Kevin.
I'm not listening.
Well, maybe the last 3 years you should have.
No.
Yeah, that's always a good idea. But no, I thought that was really the chance that Penn State had really was going to come down to the fourth quarter. And ironically, halftime didn't look that good. And then right away, bang, the interception. And there you go. And it's all going to come down to that fourth quarter. And lo and behold, it did.
Yeah, well, it did. Came down to the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter, 17-play, 77-yard drive. Angelo Mangiero had to play three different positions in that game. And I give him a lot of credit for what he was able to do. They have practiced different offensive line combinations because they needed to prepare for the moment in case something happened. And one of the combinations they have practiced was the one that played in the fourth quarter after Donovan Smith went down. Where you take Angelo Mangiero, you flip him out to right tackle, you put Wendy Loren at center, and then you flip Andrew Nelson from right tackle to left tackle. When you're in the situation Penn State is in, you can't just go to the number two tackle and go, hey, baby, you're in, which is what most teams can do. And Mangiero, I thought, gave a great account of himself. I thought Marcus Allen gave a great account of himself, too.
No question. The freshman was amazing.
The way he played safety. Now, he'll do a better job on ball judgment at the high point just through game experience. But he also was around the ball in the right spot, made 11 tackles in the game. Mike Hull was unbelievable. Mike Hull, when you make 19 tackles, a couple behind the line of scrimmage, pick off a pass. I often talk about linebackers being the perfect complement two-way player. That was the definition of it on Saturday night, the way he played. Zettel, of course, played great. I thought Saeed Blacknall gave them a big lift by how he played in the pass game. Not just the touchdown, but a couple of other things that he did that shows he's ready to take on more responsibility in the offense. And, of course, Hackenberg now with five comebacks in the fourth quarter to either win games or send them to overtime. He, when the money's on the table, he's the coolest cat out there. And I thought, the play calling's pretty good.
Steve, I got Tony on the line for you to change the subject from play calling. I know, to chat with you, rather.
Tony, why don't you jump in here? In fact, Tony, why don't you start co-hosting, although Kevin can be funny at times.
What I wanted to say about the offensive line is enjoy watching it now, because 2 years from now, that's probably going to be the best offensive line in the country.
I think the way they're recruiting, they know what they need and they're going after it. And I give them credit for putting as many Band-Aids on this thing as possible.
Well, I thought they did a pretty good job Saturday night. But I want to talk about naturally the officiating. And not the plays that everybody talked about. Do you remember when Geno Lewis caught that for a first down?
Yeah, it got clocked over the middle.
Yeah, they called the timeout to verify it. You remember the play I'm talking about?
Is it the one on the sideline to Deshaun Hamilton? Yeah, Deshaun Hamilton. I called it at the 43.5 originally, and they moved it back, and I'm thinking, what are you doing?
Well, everybody in the stadium saw that. I mean, everybody on TV saw where he caught the football and was knocked back. Now, if you paid attention, well, I know you guys did, but anybody else, Ohio State was winded. They had their hands on their hips. They were bending over. All that did was give them a 4 or 5 minute break to re-catch their win.
Right.
And for some miraculous reason, the replay's working at that time.
Right.
I mean, it's little, you could talk about the big calls, but it's those little calls. So Penn State has a nice running play with Akeel Lynch. a holding. And I believe they had earlier in the game, they had a nice pass play. There was a penalty, brought it back. Killed the momentum right then and there. And then Ohio State with that leaping call, I mean, what was that? And the crack, oh, it's the crackback part, but the other one.
Well, he tripped over him.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, that was not a good call either, but.
No. So. And that's the same official, if you remember, a few years ago when we played Nebraska. Well, Penn State played Nebraska. Penn State scored a touchdown. His crew did not call it. Do you remember that game?
Of course I did. I did the game.
Well, you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
And it's the same officiating crew.
I know. It's not as if Penn State's never...
It's not as if Penn State's going to go into a game, a Fade Widow vet, where these guys are officiating, consider Penn State 10-14 in a hole to begin with. And by the way, I predicted a final score of 24-7, Penn State's favor, and I was right. Take away the 10 points that were given Ohio State. Well, actually, you take away the overtime points, too, so I was close.
Tony, thanks so much.
Yep, bye.
Joe Susan coming up next to talk to Kevin about Bucknell's rolling on. Now they got a homestand coming up. Some home games, finally. Of course, it's going to be below zero, but...
That's the stadium in Lewisburg, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in a month.
Yeah. They seemed happy you weren't there.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PrettyInsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. They're still letting you drive cars?
So far, yeah.
I'll tell you, they have greater faith than Buhner, Joe Susan, and me. Joe Susan, head football coach at Bucknell. Joe, welcome. Kevin has a few questions for you. I'll start with the one with, how's Will Carter been for you and how he's played, Joe?
He has really come along as a player. And what's unique about his position is that in most cases, receivers want to avoid blocking at all costs. He's actually become a very good blocker. And that's a mindset and a want-to that a lot of the kids that play that position either go in there and they brush by people or they fake like they're getting beat out athletically. He goes in there with an intent on blocking somebody and blocking them for a long period, which you add to that the skills he has as a downfield receiver. He's really come along as a player.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Nick O'Brien's game, Coach. Not only did he have a decent day in special teams, but also had really that big interception as well. What's he been able to bring to both, you know, to the different positions that you have him playing in right now?
He brings a maturity beyond his years, which is important because he's only a sophomore. He played a lot as a freshman. And he also brings a sense of confidence where, I'll use the term cold-blooded, nothing bothers him. And sometimes you want him to show some emotion, but you know, that position, the corner position, you have to have a thick skin and a short memory. And he has that. He's very confident in his ability to cover anybody. He's a very strong physical player. And great hands for a corner. Oftentimes at this level, some of the guys that play on defense means they can't catch on offense, and they wind up playing defense. But you know, we use him as our kickoff return. We use him as our punt returner. He was just named the Patriot League Special Teams Player of the Week. And he'll only continue to get better because he really did not have a spring practice. And but he worked diligently to recover from the injury that he had and has really come to be one of the better corners in this league, I think.
In a back-and-forth game, it's really not hard to, you know, keep players interested, keep players engaged. But I think what impressed me was the fact that at no time did it look like the offense was rushing anything, or even behind late in the game trying to score on that last drive where Will catches the 22-yard pass. Everything seemed to be under control and systematic. How often do you go over situations like that in your practices through the season?
Everything we do has a situation tied into it, whether it's a coming-out situation, which we had to do on our first drive. We drew them offsides. We practice first and second down separate from third down. We practice red zone. But part of it is the culture we have. They have a strong belief in themselves. That is important. But they also understand that the game doesn't count until they chase you off the field. And they've been... Every team in America plays from behind at some time. And in that game, we had to play from behind at two different times. Obviously, going into the fourth quarter behind, you start to look at the clock. But when they scored, there was over 12 minutes left in the game. And we just stayed with what we felt would work best offensively. We focused on some of the better things in the run game in the second half. And some of that has to do with our approach to the run game. Not only is it the offensive line getting in tune, but it's also a good running back sets up his runs as he watches how defenses try to defend him. And CJ did a good job with that, and so did Matt Del Muro.
You know, one thing in talking a couple of years ago with Mike Krzyzewski, he was talking about leadership, and he said it got to a certain point with a couple of guys that had in his brain. He specifically pointed out Shane Battier. He said, some years I have to coach, and I have to lead, and I have to coach. He said, then when I have a kid like that, he said, I can then really take care of the coaching part because I knew he'd take care of the other parts. Are you developing the kind of players where Joe Susan and his staff can really just coach because you have enough leaders that can take care of other parts for you?
Yeah, I think it's more evident on our defense with the experience we have at with the two linebackers, Lee Marvel and Evan Byers. Evan Byers had one of his better games. Those players are such good students of the game, and it's like having another coach on the field. We called a timeout right before the half where Georgetown was threatening to score. And we had initially called the pressure, and they lined up in a 3-by-1. And I could tell that both Lee and Evan wanted to play a zone coverage to that formation. That's why we called the timeout. And we called the zone, and you know, we wound up sacking the quarterback, and the clock ran out. So it's having, obviously, game experience is so, so important at this level, especially because you don't have a chance to redshirt players. But it's the game experience and the savvy to understand. These young men study this game maybe more than they study. Well, I can't say that, but Lee's a great student, and Evan's a good student as it relates to their academics. But they are so serious about how they approach this, and it goes throughout all that they are, what they do physically, what they do with their diets, what they do with their stretching. And it's great to have those guys. And unfortunately, you look at them on the field and say, boy, it's good to have those guys on the field. And then somewhere along the way, you're going to say, where'd they go? And you know, diplomas take care of that. But that's the nature of college football.
You have played five of your last six on the road. Now you'll have three of the next four at home. In the experience of five out of six on the road, any coach takes positives out of that because of the way you've played. Has that allowed this team actually to bond because of the travel experience?
It does. It really does. The long bus rides, the bad movies that we watch on the bus rides, but you know, it's that focused group that where there are no, when you're in the hotel, there are no external distractions. Where obviously this is a homecoming weekend here, there'll be a lot of noise on campus. But what I think this group will do is be able to hold that at bay because of how special this season has become for them. And we met about it last night, and one of the things we challenged them with is dare to be great. And all the components of that are what it takes to, do you want to go down as being good, or do you want to go down as the team they refer to 20 years from now? And we have that opportunity. And the other thing, I don't know how many of these kids play pool, but growing up where I did, that was a big part of our pastime. And every shot you make, you're setting up the next shot. And you know, the shot we made on Saturday sets up this week. And you know, we're going up against a traditional opponent in Lafayette. They've had some injury problems where they've had young men come back, and I'm sure that Frank Tavani and his staff will really prepare them well for us. But I also tell them, doesn't matter who we play, nameless, faceless opponent, it's how we prepare and how we play that matters. And right now I think we're playing very good team football, and we still make mistakes. My wife asked me the other day, I was talking to her about mistakes, and she said, do you make mistakes? I said, all the time. And just the nature of being human. And but the other thing we've done is we've had some kids step up that have to fill in for people that are injured. And what that does is gives them really important game experience. Devlin Brennan on the offensive line. Matt Del Muro obviously has played a lot. And, you know, the with the receivers, we have a young man named Jake Hartman. We can line him up at a tight end. We can line him up displaced as a tight end, but he also played some wide out, and he is so productive. He's also 6'3", 225 pounds, so that's a big body people try to cover with corners and safeties.
Right. You're making the turn into November. So far, you've accomplished a lot of really good things. Do you just get them to lock in singular on this week's Super Bowl, Lafayette, or do you mention big picture to them at any point?
You should know me better than that.
One thing. There are questions you ask that you know the answers to, but the audience doesn't.
Right. I am a one day at a time guy, one game at a time, yep. And our focus, number one, it's great to be able to play at home. You know, looking forward to the weather. It'll be sunny. It won't be as warm as it's going to be tomorrow, but that's okay. It's good college football weather. And, you know, the playing at home has its merits, too. You know, the comfort of sleeping in your own bed, eating at the dining hall, but also the process with which we get ready for a home game, the meetings. Nothing's rushed. There's no bus that we have to deal with. Our bus ride home, there was a sensor off on the offensive bus, and it sounded like a air raid siren for the entire trip home. But it was, and I kept looking at the bus, and he said, "It's okay. There's air in the air brakes." I said, "I'm glad there's air in the air brakes," but he was about to pull a fuse. I said, "No, let's just go with the noise." And you know, the kids were in good spirits on the way home, obviously, when you win, but they understand that there's still time to and a lot of things to improve upon as we evolve to the next opportunity. And I think we'll continue to get better as a team. We've got to be smart in how we practice in terms of the physicality of our practice. We really do not go out in full pads anymore. Everything's right. Either in shells or spiders, and you know, they will hit you when the time comes. And if I was concerned about that, we would go out in full pads, but our guys will hit you when the time comes.
Finally, in the world of complimentary football, you know, we know Nick O'Brien was the Patriot League Special Teams Player of the Week, but how satisfied are you that you are changing field position and getting what you need out of what we refer to as hidden yards?
It is so important. Derek Maurer does an outstanding job of changing the field. The elevation that he gets on his punts have really forced people to taking fair catches. And the nature of our punt protection really it relies heavily on the flyers, the two guys on the outside, and they've done right. A good job. And, you know, that's one of the hardest things to do is catch a punt. We did make a mistake in the punt later in the game where the snap was on the ground and Derek bobbled it and it got blocked. But what was unique about that is it went beyond the line of scrimmage, and the clock was running, and any time we're ahead and there's a punt, we tell our players to just surround it and let it roll until they blow the whistle. And that's what they were doing. And I don't know what prompted the Georgetown player to jump into that, touch the ball, and then we recovered it, and it was our ball, which I spoke to Rob Scarlatta, the head coach there. He said he's one of my smartest players. And it was just a matter of reaction at the time, emotion at the time. But it's refreshing to see our players continually doing the things that we're taught, and repetition has a lot to do with it. It's you have to repeat something 16 times before it becomes habit. So we've repeated them a heck of a lot more than 16 times, and we're creating positive habits. If you repeat the wrong thing 16 times, you create a negative habit, and you can tell that we think way too much as coaches.
What a 1 o'clock on Saturday at Mathewson Stadium. You can hear it on Eagle 107, so bring your radio to the game, because voices at the game would be a big boost to the kids on homecoming weekend. Joe,
no question. I think we'll get a great crowd.
I hope so.
Yep. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin.
Joe, thanks so much.
Have a good day, gentlemen. Bye.
Joe Susan, head football coach Bucknell. We'll come back with more. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Even they have enough insurance as Kevin takes one Sunbury Motors car after another on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Kevin's music locked up. You know, we bring in the Shamokin Dam Orchestra to really lift the cultural quotient of this show. And they are paid a... I'm sorry, that's a little late. And for them to lock up and then temporarily go on strike.
Best laid plans.
Kevin? You know what the key to that was?
What's that?
It wasn't the play call to put them on. It was the execution.
Or the lack thereof in this case.
Your Steelers played great yesterday.
What did I tell you? What did I send you at the end of the game?
I don't know. You sent me something.
There's a surprise. I sent you a text that said, "I'm not getting overly excited. I'm letting the season breathe."
I'll say this, it's the most competitive division in all of football right now.
And how?
I mean, the Bengals, what did I say about that tie? That tie is hanging over everybody.
Yes, it is. And, you know, 5-3 at the halfway point for the Steelers is certainly better than last year's 2-6.
Good. It's good. I have put in a request not to put him on the air, but I wanted to talk to Bill Carollo, the head of officiating in the Big Ten, with a couple of questions. One is not about One is not about the replay. Okay, that look, whatever that is, it is.
Yeah.
They've tried to explain it a couple different ways now, which means nobody knows what happened. And the other one was the clock going to zero on the 49-yard field goal, and for being at zero at about 2 to 3 seconds, which, of course, is a delay of game and should have been. Now, there is a little bit of a fudge factor. If it goes to zero and then a half second later the ball snapped, most officials let it go, and you'll never hear an announcer go, oh, my goodness, it's at zero, if it's that split second. We see that all the time. But this held at zero for a period of time, and we know that's a mistake. They have said it. We know it, the whole thing. The two questions I put to him that I'm trying to make sure I get an answer to is, isn't the clock supposed to stop on a defensive penalty? And if so, when is it supposed to start again? Because on the penalty were for roughing with Christian Hackenberg, they gave them the 15 yards, and then the clock was at 37 seconds, and then they started the clock again. I was always under the understanding, and I may be mistaken, that the clock would not start until the ball was snapped because it was a defensive penalty. If it was an offensive penalty, you'd mark it off, set it, wind the clock. That's standard, and I know that. But this was a defensive penalty, and I thought the clock would not start again until Penn State snapped the ball. Instead, they started running the clock, and it got to 25. Then James Franklin wanted to know what was going on with the clock, and they charged him with a timeout. Well, he wasn't asking for a timeout. He was not asking for a timeout. Just like in the Sam Ficken field goal, to be honest with you, Urban Meyer was not asking for a timeout. And then the other thing I asked him was the leaping penalty, whether that was assessed properly or not. I believe it was. So it
on
ended up
kickoff.
Being a 12.
No, that was on the extra point.
That was on the okay. No, that was
or field goal.
This, yeah,
extra point.
No.
I know what you mean.
Extra point in overtime.
Right.
And what happens is the irony is that in overtime, if you get the if you have the ball second, you get the ball right away in the second overtime. So it's a different circumstance compared to a kickoff. You go from having the ball to getting the ball again if you tie the game up, which they did. So those are the questions. I want to make sure I've got clarification on that. And why didn't Penn State, if the clock's supposed to stop, then why didn't Penn State get a timeout back?